My name's the V-Man, and right now we're going to do a little discussion here about what it means to be a conscientious objector in a time of war. Joining me right now in the studio is Bob Fitch. He currently works with the Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz, California, as their webmaster, draft and conscientious objector counselor, and volunteer recruiter, and general administrative gopher. Bob Fitch spent 14 years working as a photojournalist for many key civil rights, peace, justice, and organized labor unions and campaigns. Bob, thanks for joining us tonight.
A delight. I'm honored to be here with Stephen.
And also on the telephone, we have Stephen Funk. He is a 20-year-old Marine reservist, a former student at USC in Southern California. And this week, Stephen Funk will become among the first public war resistors from the ranks of the Marines during this conflict and the first on the West Coast. Stephen Funk, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's begin with you, Stephen. Tell me a little bit about your background in the military. You're a Marine reservist, and just give us an update. How long have you been in the military? What did you learn there? Why did you join the military?
Well, I joined the military in February of 2002, so just last year, and I went to boot camp in May. My specialty job was landing support, which are the people that are in charge of the beach and landing helicopters. I think at the time I joined the military, it was for reasons that a lot of young people do. I was depressed and out of school for the first time from USC, and I was looking for a direction and a way to get connected that I was lacking in my life. And I saw the military as a way to do that. I joined as a reservist, and got out of all my training in November last year.
Tell us a little bit about what your opinion is of this war in Iraq right now that's been raging for a little over a week and a half.
Politically, I think there are many things wrong with this war. As a conscious objector, you have to have a moral or religious opposition to all wars, not just unpopular ones. And that's true. I think particular, though, it can be said that there are a lot of immoral things about it, especially the way we've been led into it and the fact that it's illegal and a lot of the lies that we're being told about it. So those are my feelings on it.
I want to bring Bob Fitch into the discussion here for a moment. Bob, thanks for joining us again.
A lot of folk are very sincere when they enlist. They really do seek a shape in their lives. They seek a new occupation. They seek camaraderie. They seek maybe strengthening the physical challenge and all of those kinds of things. And you had some sincere hopes when you went in. And so what happened to those hopes and aspirations? What did you discover was the reality for you?
Well, you know, I think because I went in at a time I was depressed, I didn't think about it as much as I should have. I don't think a lot of people do before they enlist. Some people enlist out of desperation. But, you know, I found out that a lot of what I thought I knew about the military through advertising and through movies was, you know, the reality of it is much more violent and much more, I feel, immoral. And that's why I decided I couldn't be a part of that anymore.
How did that expose itself to you? How did that immorality and violence, what did you see? What did you experience?
Well, you know, there's some experiences, you know, in boot camp, it's really stressful. And, well, there's things like in combat training, we'd have to shout kill every time we make a striking movement. Mm-hmm. And I would just fake my way through it. I wouldn't yell. You know, you're supposed to say it out loud and intense, and I just couldn't do it. I thought it was really wrong. There's the change you see in people. They're under a lot of stress to conform to this certain way that is going to be effective in combat. And when you see this change in people and you see them losing their individuality, which is really stressed, is losing your individuality, that really saddened me, you know, just that, because I value that so much. You know, I think most Americans value that we have the freedom of expression and we have free will. And I think the military training strives to take some of that away.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in the need to kill, there's a need to be part of a pack?
Yes, especially the group. It's always about the group, you know. And that's why it's hard for conscious objectors to speak out about their opinions because of the training that you get, the training that says you have to be part of the group, that you have to always subordinate to authority and to whatever the plan is. And you know, mustering up the courage to do this took a while for me.
Takes enormous time and preparation. Can I move back to the time when you were recruited? Did you engage a recruiter? What was that experience?
No, actually, I'm not sure how, but the recruiter found my number and began calling me and over again until I agreed to go in to a delayed entry program event, which was obstacle course. And at that event, I was the only person that had not agreed to be a Marine as of yet. And, you know, and that's the point where he saw, you know, my depression, and he saw that perhaps I'm depressed because I'm looking for that group feeling and that sense of belonging and the sense of direction.
A lot of people don't know what delayed entry program is. Just very briefly, one signs up in advance, agrees to enlist at a period approximately a year off from the sign up, and then becomes part of a kind of a club that with other persons who were intending to enlist, and you got in with a gang that was really ready to go. They took advantage of that, I gather.
Yeah. The rest of them all tried to be, you know, include me in there. And it wasn't as if they were intentionally being deceitful,
right,
but they definitely had that game plan to draw me in. And it worked, you know. And a lot of people were surprised. I wasn't your gung-ho Marine. There was nothing I had done previously in high school or in college that, you know, people would think that I would ever be interested in that, you know. So the people from my past were very surprised.
Can you share that, or what your past had been like, or what you had discovered in your past?
Oh, well, you know, in high school I went to a very... I think very liberal high school. It was an alternative school, and, you know, things like, I mean, everyone called it like a hippie school, you know. It was very nonviolent. No one ever got in fights with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Before high school, I'd never gotten in a fight. You know, actually, I'd never been in a fight in my life. I avoided that. And that was, even though I grew up in a you know, poor neighborhood where that was more rampant. And, you know, I was a vegetarian in the third grade until high school, and, you know, I'm studying biology because I really care deeply about animals, and it was just, you know, I'm a more of a soft-spoken, sensitive type guy, and it was, yeah, like I said, it was a big surprise for everybody I knew.
Can I pop back to the military experience? As you begin to discover your own feelings and your own beliefs, and what was it like to begin to express that? Or, I mean, really, what happened to you? What kind of responses did you get? Or did you feel you couldn't? I don't know what your experience was.
Yes, you're very much suppressed of your own individuality in boot camp and in regular life, because that would not be effective. You know, it's more effective if everybody has the same goals and same ideas about everything. So my individuality was suppressed, and
it sounds like we lost our guest there. We're going to have to do our best to try and get him back on the phone. Bob, let me ask you this while we try to get Stephen Funk back on the line. I'm looking at Section 6J of the Military Selective Service Act, and in part it states, "Nothing contained in this title shall be construed to require any person to be subject to combat training and service in the armed forces of the United States who, by reason of religious training and belief, is conscientiously opposed to participation in war in any form. The term religious training and belief does not include essentially political, sociological, or philosophical views, or a merely personal moral code. So given this information, you work with conscientious objectors. What is the claim that most people make when they apply for CO status?
Well, one of the first things I want to comment here is that many people who are in the military don't believe they can get out. A lot of people who are in that delayed entry program don't believe they can get out. Delayed entry program is not enlistment. All you have to do is send a letter to the CO of the recruitment office saying, I'm not in it any longer and you're out. Remember that. You can get out. We can give some more information. People can grab their pens and pencils and we'll jot down some information later. The dilemma that Stephen is facing is that he didn't find his CO spot before he went in, so now he's in. Once you're in, it's really hell. I remember during the Vietnam War, a series of Marines and Air Force pilots who, even though when they were in the service, had completed all of their applications and submitted for CO status, were sent back to the front three times. So when you're in the military, they're very rough, although the law is very explicit that you have the right to leave. So one of the things that Stephen is doing to me is very courageous. It's going to be a tough process.
You're tuned into Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and my name is V-Man. Joining me in the studio is Bob Fitch, who works at the Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz. He is a draft and CO counselor. We're also joined on the phone by Stephen Funk, who is a 20-year-old Marine reservist who is currently what they call UA, which is an unauthorized absence from. He was to report at Camp Pendleton in mid-February. Stephen Funk, we were just talking a little bit about Section 6J of the Military Selective Service Act, and Bob was explaining a little bit about the procedure there. Can you tell me first, well, how did you first hear about becoming a conscientious objector?
I had to find it out on my own. The first time I found out about it was on the internet in my military occupational school training, when we had more access to things like that. And I found the GI Rights Hotline, and I found the Central Committee for Conscientious Objection. And luckily, both of them are here in the Bay Area, so and also the anti-war effort is very large here, so I've had a lot of support. I didn't get that information in the military, you know, for obvious reasons. They're not going to tell you these things, but you know, I sought advice from chaplains, military chaplains, and even, you know, I told them my moral dilemmas and what I was thinking, and I think the responsible thing would have been for them to tell me about this option, but they didn't. I guess I shouldn't have expected them to, but I think they should have.
Is that common, Bob?
Chaplains go into the military to bless the war, to keep military members functional so they'll fight better wars. That's their job. We've had long arguments. I was in seminary once and intense arguments with military chaplains.
Let me throw a question at you, Bob. What typically is someone like Stephen facing in terms of some type of punishment for his refusal to
fight? Hey, I'm going to bounce that back to Stephen. What are they counseling? What's the process now?
Well, you know, since the military, they're not really telling me what I really don't know what to expect. COs I've talked to from the last war, they all received all different sorts of punishments, and I really don't know what to expect. They basically have told me to turn myself in, and we'll take it from there.
Have you filled out any applications yet?
Yes, my conscientious objector application is complete. I've gotten letters of support from family and friends, and you know, I got one from Father Bill O'Donnell. And basically, before I can turn that in, I have to, because I am UA right now, I have to be punished for that. And they won't process my application until my punishment is done. So whatever that punishment is, I have to finish it.
One of the more famous COs from the first Gulf War is Jeff Patterson. He did a very public demonstration on the runway as his troops were being deployed, and he refused. He sat down on the runway. I heard him speak about a year ago, and he talked about a backlash that he suffered from his fellow, you know, Army. I think he was a Marine also, actually. So the other Marines that he was stationed with. Have you experienced any kind of backlash at all from other military personnel?
No, because I haven't really been in contact with them. That was under the advice of my attorney, so that you know, I don't get any arguments or say something I don't mean to say to them. And most of the people I know have been deployed anyway, so I haven't really been in touch with them. I have gotten backlash from other people that are pro-war, and you know, I've had backlash in articles written against me, you know, things calling me stupid and cowardly and un-American and things like that.
And what's your response typically to those accusations?
Well, you know, usually these are coming from people that are, they're making illogical arguments, so I usually just ignore it, but it isn't really easy for me to do. I mean, the easiest thing I could do is just go along with the program and do what I was trained to do, and if I just agreed to do that, it would be so easy. But because I have strong convictions about it, I'd have to live with my conscience for the rest of my life, and that's much worse, in my opinion. So I just ignore them, basically.
Hey, this is going to be a courageous challenge. I might just briefly go over that Stephen will be interviewing with the military chaplains, with psychiatrists, with investigating officers, maybe with legal officers, then with top military commanders who will make a final decision. This is a long and tedious process, and they can make it very rigorous for him and brutal and demeaning, especially military brigs aren't anything even like the jail in Santa Cruz, because the meanest of the mean run the brigs.
We're speaking with Stephen Funk. He's a 20-year-old Marine reservist. He will be holding a press conference tomorrow, Tuesday, April 1st, 2003, at 9 a.m. in San Jose, California. What do you plan to say to the members of the press that will be assembled tomorrow?
Well, basically, I'll be trying to... I'll be saying a lot of what I said today, but basically, I'll be saying my moral objections to war. I'm going to have other speakers there. Father Bill O'Donnell will speak, and my attorney will speak. Conscious Objector GI from the first Gulf War will be speaking. I think it will be big. I think there's going to be a lot of media coverage, and I expect some hard questions, but I've had a lot of hard questions so far, and I'm very prepared. And I think there'll be a lot of people there in support. I've been very active in this anti-war effort. I've spoken to a lot of people. I've spoken at youth rallies for ACLU and other small groups, and I hope it'll be a nice event, little event.
Maybe we can wrap up here with a little hope for the future. What do you think it's going to take to get through to the vast majority of the people in the military that war is immoral?
You know, I know a lot of people in the military are having a struggle with this war especially, but war in general. Their beliefs about killing were challenged when they were first trained, and now that they are actually doing it, they have to rethink it. And I think it takes an effort, but, you know, all they really need to do is reconnect with this feeling that this, you know, it's a moral belief that killing is wrong, and everybody has it deep down inside, and I just hope more people will come to that realization and, you know, have the courage, the moral courage to stand up and for what they believe in. But it is a very individual effort.
Well, part of your application will be talking about how that developed for you. You read all the forms. Where did that take seed in your life way back there? Maybe even as a young person, where did that idea come to you and how? Do you remember how that kind of woke up in you?
Well, I think you know, I was raised with my mother and my grandparents, and I think they really tried to bring me up with morals against violence, because my mom had escaped an abusive relationship, and I think because of that situation as a child, they really stressed that for my education growing up. And but, you know, in our culture, in American culture, it's pretty violent, and people are desensitized to these things, which makes our military easier to train people, because they're already more likely to be violent. But deep down, everybody has those feelings.
I guess we'll leave it at that. Do you have any final thoughts to leave our audience with tonight, Stephen?
Nothing, really. Just, you know, part of my going public is so that people know about this option for military people. But it's also for people who are young and very vulnerable to enlistment, you know, high schoolers with the No Child Left Behind Act, and the amount of advertising and time spent on trying to get them to join the military, and lies they're being fed. You know, I'm hoping that some people will hear this and, you know, think a lot more, because I really wish I wouldn't be in this mess. So, you know, I just hope that people do a lot more thinking, because war isn't just a political issue. It's very much a moral issue, and that's what conscientious objection is all about. So, you know, that's all, really.
All right. Thanks for joining us tonight, and wish you the best in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother. We'll stick with you.
Goodbye.